RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
Martin Bennett has Parkinson's, and he believes it may be a direct result of spraying environmental toxins without protection since he was 16. Well, he's in his mid-60s now, so you can see how far that goes back. So we've invited Martin onto RCR to talk about his thoughts, really, on whether it's environmental toxins that have resulted in his illness and what brought him to this conclusion. Martin, welcome to RCR. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity, Paul.
Okay, it goes back to 1975 pretty well, doesn't it, this?
It sure does, yes, yes.
Okay, yep. So maybe take us a bit of a time warp, take us back in the time machine, and how did you come into contact with these environmental toxins, obviously spraying them, but what was it, working somewhere on the farm? Tell us about it.
I suppose the journey sort of starts back in around about 75 on a family farm that parents moved from the city to the country and for the country life. And we had a farm that was really infested with weeds and that. And so a major spraying program was underway, and family and everybody just joined in like they did on many farms at that stage. You know, and there's those development stages through the 60s and 70s and getting land looking pristine and tidy. And from that age, I suppose I had the first contact with those sort of chemicals with Dad going out, you know, spraying and dragging hoses, and it was pretty willy-nilly and away you went, you know. So, but I, you know, I can't be positive, say that's where Parkinson's came from or anything like that, but there are alarm bells because through history we can look back and see, you know, with the Welsh coal miners and things like that and Agent Orange and asbestos, and there's, you know, our history is plagued with things that humans have done to themselves, and there's a lot of people end up being sort of victims of these things. And but, you know, I'm a bit of a realist. I don't jump to too many conclusions, and these things need to be science-based, but the thing is that there's just so much evidence, from anecdotal evidence around people that I run into that in different groups with Parkinson's, and there's all of these farmers just keep popping up one after the other. It's
right, yeah,
the numbers are pretty strong.
So what were the chemicals that you were spraying back then? And did you have any knowledge? Did anyone have any knowledge about safety or otherwise?
Well, you know, I was only a kid at that stage, so you sort of just went along with the flow and that sort of thing. And there was nobody wearing masks. Or, you know, I don't think I would have ever seen anybody, neighbours, anybody wearing masks. But the main chemicals in those days were Toradon 50D, and then there was 2,4,5-T for brush killer and stuff like that.
Right.
Those are the main chemicals we had things to do with. Paraquat was a bit on the edge in some places, but, you know, I didn't have much knowledge of that at that stage. And the sheep farming counterparts, you know, had the sheep dip story as well too, you know, where, you know, everybody got covered in the stuff. So,
and no one gave it much of a thought for safety at the time. I know that you were young back then, but obviously, you know, the parents were doing this as well. There were adults around. Did they?
Yeah.
They just kind of just go with the flow by the sounds of things.
Yeah, I think everybody generally did, you know. It wasn't just on our farm, it was on lots of farms. And, you know, I know farmers that have got Parkinson's in our local district, and you know, I can go and talk to them and have the same story about, you know, doing exactly the same things in their time, and, you know, can scratch your head and think, you know, maybe this was a contributing factor. But the big thing now is that about the volume of chemicals that we use on farm now is hugely reduced, for the fact that there's less weeds, but we're also super careful, and we use them where we need to in small volumes. Our guys run around on the farm on their motorbikes with chippers. If you can chip a thistle rather than spray it, well, why wouldn't you do that? That tends to be the policy of how we do things, to trying to minimize the risks.
And what was the quantity that you were exposed to over time, do you think?
I can go back and remember Dad would go out for the day and have 3 200-litre drums on a tray on the back of a tractor. And, wow. You know, three of those every day, 7 days a week at certain times of the year. And, it's a lot of volume. But we wouldn't use a whole lot almost in a season now.
Yeah, gosh, like going for it back in the day. So when did you start to notice symptoms? And what were the symptoms?
I'm left-handed, and some of the early symptoms I had, that would have been going back probably, it's just on 10 years ago now, I suppose, the first symptoms. I was struggling using a hammer fencing and banging in endless staples on fencing when you're doing. And trying to repair fences and doing new fencing and stuff like that. So you'd run out of, your arm would get really sore and start aching and didn't know why the hell it was happening and what was going on, things like that. That was one of the first signs. And then probably just the coordination stuff with my hands and the use of my left hand when I was trying to inseminate cows, for mating cows and getting them to calf. So it was it's a hands-on job and you need a really good left hand with a good feeling. And that became a problem. And so I had to give that away.
So did you lack strength or was just like soreness and coordination?
It's strength and coordination. And then after that, you start looking into things a bit deeper and went to a neurologist. A local doctor referred me to a neurologist and I was there for probably 15 minutes and he said, you got Parkinson's. And
whoa.
the crazy thing about Parkinson's, just about everything else, you can take a blood test or a DNA sample, you can do all sorts of tissue tests and x-rays and you can do something and you can diagnose things pretty quickly these days. But Parkinson's is still one of those things. There's no sort of a test except doing a CT scan on the base of your brain and you can see the substantia nigra starting to grey off instead of being dark. I think that's about the only way they can really tell it. And the rest is just a test walk down the hallway, and if your arms don't swing and you can't smell and you've got less strength on one side or you've got a bit of a limp and things like that. And on the day being told that I've lost my sense of smell completely, I didn't even know that it happened. It was just bizarre.
That's interesting. I hadn't heard about the smell thing before, but that's... So it affects senses, and that's one of the senses, I suppose. So,
well, one of the first things that I probably learned about Parkinson's is that the sensor that you have that is closest to the brain is the olfactory bulb in your nose. So from your nose to your brain, it's a short drive to the business end. It's not very far.
Yeah.
It certainly is a short drive. And that is the high risk, and it doesn't have to. If you put a few things together, then you start talking about sprays, and that access to your brain. It's a bit scary.
Yeah, because you're inhaling through there. That's directly, right? Yeah.
But we all do different things in the city and smog and all sorts of stuff like that. You know. But anyway, that's how it sort of played out. But
So how's it? Progress to where you are at now, Martin? Are you still doing any sort of work or have you had to give that up?
We own a dairy farm.
Yep.
And I'm still on the dairy farm every day, pretty much. And I suppose my capacity is probably half to what it was. We have a young guy on contract who's the enthusiastic guy around the place. But I still work full-time. I do proper days But some days I just got to knock off early because you just run out of go and puff, and so it's fatigue and stuff like that. But I'm pretty darn good with a hand with my right hand now instead of my left hand. You learn to do things, and teach yourself to write with the right hand. That's a bit of a challenge, I can tell you.
Well, I'm left-handed, so I can kind of relate to the struggle using the right. Yeah. So good on you for that. Yeah.
But anyway, you know, it's just one of those things. I've had a good run. Different people have different. Get dealt through different with Parkinson's, and I've had sort of 9 years now since I've diagnosed, and I've done 3 triathlons and do all sorts of stupid things and go fishing and do stuff and things like that. So you just get stuck in and you got to push back pretty hard, and you're losing your battle with the physical stuff. But really, at the end of the day, if you're prepared to put in the effort, prepared to put in the work, you'll be on a slide, but you're going to have better quality of life by a long way. So. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. So it's not as if there's no hope. If you go hard, you can slow it down, push back against it.
Oh, absolutely. There's so much evidence out there to say that if you can exercise and keep yourself fit and maintain your balance and your strength and stuff like that. So BoxFit was the thing I went to, which was boxing was great. You said come home with a pretty sore arm, but at least this darn thing still worked. Yeah. So you just got to keep at it and keep doing things. And I think the big thing with a lot of progressive things like this, I've got my own theory that it's about finding a new normal. So what is brilliant I can do today? The best I can do today is got to be brilliant. But then 5 years ago, that would have been accepted just a norm that you could just do that. So you got to find your new highs, if that makes any sense.
That makes a lot of sense. So you've come across many people. What of your age. I mean, you're kind of in the same age range as me, so I can relate to that generation.
Yeah, and older, yeah.
Yeah, you're seeing cases that are kind of similar in numbers that make you really think that there's some connection to agrichemicals that were being used back in the day. Does it piss you off, Martin, that it was that loose back in the day? Because there would have been some knowledge around at the time that these were potentially toxic substances. I mean, they sprayed 2,4,5-T on Vietnam, didn't they? So did that for a reason. Yeah,
they did. Well, I don't know about. I try not to look too far back and get pissed off about what's behind you. You know, you really got to look forward and that sort of thing. But yeah, you probably can. But look, I like all those other areas that way humans we've treated ourselves badly. But I think there's definitely some links there. And I look back and think, oh, you can change this or change that. But I think what the most positive thing you can take out of it or you can do. Is realize that there's another generation coming along behind us, and my focus would be to make sure that they are well looked after, yep. And you know, safety for them is pretty high. We want to make sure that they've got the right, you know, the right thinking and the right attitude, and challenge the right things that are around. You know, so health and safety has changed hugely in all those years. So, and farmers were more isolated in the past. Where these days, there's a lot more information. It's easy to get for farmers. Yeah, well, just our people in general, really. Hope that answers the question somehow.
Yeah, chemicals are still being used out there. There seems to be a move now towards different styles of farming, which excludes as much of that as possible, regenerative farming, et cetera. So what's your advice to farmers nowadays? Should they steer clear of glyphosates and other chemicals and try and do it a different way? Or is there always going to be a need, a need for at least some of that somewhere along the line? What do you think?
Well, it appears to be in my horizon that there's still a need. But I think we've been involved with a whole lot of sustainability things over the years with our farm and our business and industry stuff that have been involved with. And a lot of farmers have taken a lot of things out of their farming business that they use in terms of chemicals and fertilizers. They haven't necessarily all just turned organic, but they've modified and streamlined what they do because they've worked out pretty quickly that stuff that was used ad lib and easily is also a huge waste. And it takes a lot of, and if you can cut down that waste and cut down the use, you cut a lot of cost out of the system, and that got quite a bit of attention. So farmers, yeah. I think, have had a really big attitude change. And it's very different on farm now than it was sort of 30, 40 years ago. So we've come a long way.
Yeah, no, it sounds like it. Martin, thanks for coming on and telling your story. Really interesting. It's good to hear that you're kind of coping with it and making the best of it. And that is a great attitude for people to take note of. Obviously, we've looked at chemicals in agriculture quite a bit here at RCR. So this is another part of that picture. So thanks for coming on. You're an inspiration.
No problem. It's my pleasure.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.